910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The hush money trial of Donald Trump not in session today, but Trump's attorneys are busy with court filings trying to kickstart another challenge to appeal the judge's limited gag order, claiming it's unconstitutional. That trial resumes tomorrow. Attorneys for Trump's Georgia election interference case also working to appeal a judge's ruling that allows DA Fannie Willis to remain on the case. ABC's Aaron Katursky has details.
The appellate court has agreed to take up the matter. They haven't, agreed to any decision, but they've at least agreed to take it up, which is yet one more delay for a case that still does not have a date to start trial.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says the U.S. has paused sending less precise bombs to Israel over concerns it may harm more civilians as Israel pushes ahead with military operations in Rafah. The threat of tornadoes lingering in the heartland today, and a state of emergency remains in Michigan after a reported twister outside Kalamazoo. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden in Wisconsin today announcing a huge expansion of Microsoft's footprint in Racine County. But Biden has work to do with Democrats on his support for the Israeli war in Gaza.
Remember, looking back to the primaries in Wisconsin and Michigan, we saw those protest votes over this issue when it comes to President Biden. That is a huge warning sign for the president in these critical battleground states where a few thousand votes, as we saw last election, could really decide it all.
Reporter Rachel Scott in Washington. Wisconsin is getting almost $18 million from Washington to fight fentanyl and opioid abuse. Senator Tammy Baldwin chairs a key appropriations subcommittee. She says communities on the front lines need resources to fight the epidemic. The money comes from the state opioid response grant program. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. City of Superior employees will get more paid time off when they become parents after a resolution passed by the City Council on Tuesday. Going forward, city employees will get 6 weeks of paid parental leave and will no longer need to use vacation or sick time to get payment during their leave. The resolution went into effect immediately after passing and will not cost taxpayers any extra money as the cost of the parental leave is already included in their salaries. First responders were particularly supportive of the measure. Ascensia Health will host a free skin cancer screening on Monday in honor of Skin Cancer Awareness Month. The event, called Melanoma Monday, will be hosted at the Duluth Family Medicine Clinic from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Anybody interested in getting a free skin cancer screening can contact the clinic to make an appointment. Additionally, healthcare officials are reminding residents to check themselves regularly for signs of skin cancer, like large asymmetrical moles with varying colors that change in size, shape, and color. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The crew is coming home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers wrapping up a road trip. They open a four-game set tomorrow against the St. Louis Cardinals at American Family Field in Milwaukee. The Brewers with a dramatic come-from-behind win last night when Willy Adames comes up with a three-run homer, a called shot in front of Royals fans to win 6-5 in KC. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
I mean, that's playing all nine. When you play all nine, you got a chance every pitch, and it came down to the last pitch. I mean, it was like, did I just see that? It was a cool moment.
NFL, the Packers' regular season schedule, not to be released now until sometime next week, maybe Wednesday, May 15th. The Packers hoping to improve even more on offense.
You're always, always looking to take the next step. You have to keep evolving, and so it's just a matter of what's our best next step.
That's Packers offensive coordinator Adam Stanovich with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Partly sunny today and a touch breezy with winds out of the northeast, dragging our highs to the low 60s. Clouds thicken again tonight with spotty showers scraping us. Otherwise, tomorrow, more sunshine and highs in the upper 50s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 64.
busted pencils.
Fully leaded education talk.
When you have a fully funded privatized voucher system, Heather, help us out.
Wisconsin has made a choice to disinvest from the public good and put money into a wholly unaccountable system and just let their political cronies laugh all the way to the bank while our kids pay the price.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, so what's a great way to spread awareness that driving high is illegal everywhere? A catchy song, of course.
You can run, but you can't drive high. You can run, but you can't drive high.
Friendly reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Crude and Dom.
Joe Biden in Racine, Wisconsin. Crudy's there. He's going to bring you all the coverage on the Devil's Advocates. Tune in 3 to 6, Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Love, forgive me.
What's up, Wisconsin? I am Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. On Monday this past week, my producer, but on Monday guest, Anya Esther, joined me to observe Holocaust Remembrance Day. And as Anya and I were talking about the topic and getting prepared for Monday's show, which you can find at civicmedia.us, we thought that it also made sense to try to talk about both Holocaust denialism and what genocide prevention actually looks like today. Much of our international system of laws related to genocide prevention, namely intervention, right? Intervention by some countries, generally in another sovereign nation's conduct of its business. Nearly that entire legal system, including the creation of the International Court of Justice, the International Criminal Court, etc., all sprung from World War II and the Holocaust. But America's grappling with genocide and how we respond and when we respond and what does that mean goes back much, much further than World War II. And it is complicated. It is complicated to say the very, very least. So we're going to jump in here. Again, you're welcome to call. You're welcome to text, to share. I grew up in a time in the 90s where genocides were, frankly, in the news nearly every day. Slobodan Milosevic was sort of paramount in a lot of my in-classroom learning in both grade school and high school. The genocide in Rwanda, in Sudan, these were all part of the international relations, the foreign policy discussions growing up. And I myself was a bit of a student, not of the genocide per se, but of how do nations engage in foreign policy? Because it is so very complicated. And here we find ourselves today in this very moment having these same discussions again. I don't think Anya and I are going to give you answers today, but we'll sure try to have a discussion. So again, welcome. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm joined by my usual producer, but today's special guest, Anya Esther, to talk about genocide prevention, to talk about Holocaust denialism, and hopefully to remind ourselves very humbly that these questions, the complexities of how does society, how do we as Americans respond to genocide or humanitarian crises? These are eternal questions that politicians and our country have always struggled with. So welcome, Anya. Thanks for doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on again. This is, you know, a hard topic, as was Monday, but an important topic. And so I'm happy, excited, if that's the right term at all, to be here to do that, work with you.
Yeah, weighty work, but important.
Yes.
Again, folks, you want to join our conversation, you have questions, comments, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I thought we would start with some of the sound that you gave to Calvin, who I should also thank for being here and running the board for us today. You are appreciated, Calvin.
I'm happy to be here, as always.
Thank you. But I thought we would start with the I hate your neighbor sound that you have, and let's just take a listen.
Really? Are you a racist?
It's really not skin color for me. I'm more of an anti-Semite. And I believe the biggest demon.
I guess that.
Would you think there should be another genocide?
I don't think there ever was genocide to begin with.
Sabrina, what do you think should happen to the Jews?
I think there should be another genocide. Or a genocide. You're all looking at me puzzled.
That's pretty hard.
Even my husband, you know?
And when you say genocide, you mean the women, the children, the kids?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because she's holding them right there, those two reasons.
Because they're a poison and they need to be eradicated so my children and all the other white children have a chance in this world.
And you can genocide the answer?
Yes.
I love you, baby.
There's a word in that sound that jumped out at me, and that was poisoning, right? And the Republican nominee for the president of the United States has used that language to great applause, to great fanfare, repeatedly, poisoning the blood of America. I don't know that that's an American value. But again, trying to zoom back out and think about this in terms of what are our what's our moral responsibility? What is the legal framework for intervention in the face of genocide? And what does history have to teach us? And again, the international legal structure comes largely from World War II. I'm sure we'll talk about the fact that at the gates to Dachau, there is a plaque that has written in many, many languages, never again. And yet we heard in that clip, oh, I never thought, I didn't think there wasn't a Holocaust. I don't believe it. What, Anya, what does this bring up for you? Have you experienced people espousing these views either indirectly or directly? I mean, that is revolting.
Yeah, that clip is really haunting. To give it some context, that's from the Vice TV show Hate Thy Neighbor, season one, episode one. You can find both seasons on YouTube. It's a really stirring show. You should definitely watch it, about neo-Nazism in America. And this is a couple, a husband and wife. The husband starts out by saying he doesn't think there was a genocide, and she tries to agree and
she
then
slips.
Says,
yes,
but there should be another. How, you know, what it brings up for me, other than the rage and the sickness in my stomach, is, yeah, I have experienced not something as direct as what these two folks have said, but a couple quick instances. Growing up in Wausau, before I'd even finished my Jewish conversion, but I'd been semi-public with my peers about the fact that I was looking into converting. It was the summer of 2015. So on my way to Badger Girl State. Were you a Badger Girl State girl, Maggie, by any chance?
I wasn't, but no. I had some friends that did that. Yes.
There you go. Well, we were getting in the car to go, and we woke up that morning to find that someone had burned a swastika into the pavement in front of our house with what appeared to just be lighter fluids. So that was my first instance. And then as recently as this year, these past 3 months, I'll leave the name of the business out because it wasn't their fault, but I went into a Upper East Side business in Milwaukee, and like many businesses, when you walk in, they had a bulletin board and some area for people to leave business cards and pamphlets, and one caught my eye. It was a bright blue pamphlet. There were about six of them, and it said, should you be concerned about free speech limitations surrounding research about the Holocaust? And that's such a, it's so many things.
Yeah.
And of course I opened it and I quickly read through it and found that it was a bunch of conjecture essentially saying, isn't it strange that, isn't it weird that, and everything it was pointing to was essentially saying glaringly, well, we'd like to talk about the Holocaust, but didn't do the research. So isn't it strange that we don't know what we're talking about? I touched base with the owner. I said, you should be aware that these were placed here. Clearly you didn't place them here, but someone has come into your venue and placed rhetoric, a pamphlet that essentially says you should be concerned that maybe the Holocaust wasn't real. And I found that while just going to pick up a morning treat with my boyfriend, here's this pamphlet that says, hey, maybe this huge genocide wasn't real. And that was truly jarring for me.
Yeah.
To find that mixed in with like, come learn how to drum. And if you need a math tutor and if you need someone to walk your dog.
New
and
yoga
also,
studio.
Exactly. And also maybe it wasn't 6 million. Maybe it was only, it's horrifying, horrifying stuff.
I'm sorry that happened to you. Let me just say that.
Thank you.
I wanted to, one of the first public political debates about American response and do we intervene in the face of genocide goes back to before World War I.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. And that's the Armenian genocide. And I just pulled a whole bunch of stuff. We'll talk about a lot of it today, but I wanted to talk a little bit about this. There's a book, a sort of seminal text out there. It's Samantha Powers, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide, came out of the 90s. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But one of the complexities is that Woodrow Wilson often is thought of as an anti-interventionist. Mm. But he was faced with what was a very complicated political atmosphere. And before that time, America had basically operated on a principle of non-intervention. That was just what we were. It was very isolationist. And in fact, that's you know, the Monroe Doctrine, right? If you think back on these things. And if you go way far back, George Washington's farewell address basically adopted a non-interventionist or isolationist posture. Some called it non-entanglement. Sort of a nice way to put lipstick on that sort of a pig.
Right.
And at the time, I just want to share these words. This was during the public debate pre-World War I. Republican Senator Warren Harding, who succeeded Wilson as president in 1920, summed up the Republican position on whether or not America should intervene in the Armenian genocide. He said this, I am not insensible to the suffering of Armenia, but I am thinking of America first. Safety as well as charity begins at home. America first. I wonder where I've heard that lately. We'll continue to dig in. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. Bit of a heavy topic today. Keep it locked, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Are you and your family weather ready?
I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The weather impacts everything, and the history of windmills includes using the weather. In this case, the wind, to help mill grain and pump water. The modern windmills that you see across Wisconsin today are often called wind turbines. These still use the wind, but now it's to produce electricity.
And a new study shows that turbines can also lower the daytime temperature while keeping it warmer at night. The moving air protects crops from frost. It's a weather-ready fact. And Saturday, May 11th, is National Windmill Day. If you really want to celebrate, save June 5th through the 9th, because it's Windmill Days in Baldwin, Wisconsin, a celebration of Dutch heritage and the windmills in the village. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
I was born by the river in a little tin. And just like.
Welcome back.
River, I've been running.
I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. We are talking about some tough stuff today, a sort of sequel to our Monday episode that was an observation of Holocaust Remembrance Day. We're talking today about isolationism. What is our moral responsibility as Americans, as Wisconsinites, as people of good faith that enjoy civil society here? And what can each one of us do in the face of genocide? And we were just talking last segment about the fact that this question of whether to intervene and how to intervene and under what circumstances is an age-old one and goes back to even George Washington's time and the Monroe Doctrine. One of the most ardent advocates for intervention in the very late 19th century and early 20th century was Theodore Roosevelt, interestingly enough. He tried to articulate a set of principles for the United States that would define when we respond to what he called then crimes against civilization. And in the forefront of his mind was the Armenian genocide that had been occurring between 1894 and 1896 in advance sort of the more well-known atrocities of 1915. And even then, even as Theodore Roosevelt tried to articulate principles for American intervention in the face of genocide, again, language of that time, Secretary of State criticized him. This is Secretary of State Richard Olney back then, criticized Roosevelt for, quote, lecturing a foreign state upon the management of its internal affairs. We're talking about the same stuff today. I mean, and this, again, is some language from Roosevelt. He believed that, quote, the cases in which we could interfere by force of arms are necessarily few. It was inevitable that the country should desire eagerly to give expression to its horror when it witnesses such systematic and long-extended cruelty and oppression of which the Armenians have been victims. And in Europe at the time, this was not met with open arms. This was viewed very much as Americans trying to meddle in the affairs of Europe. And again, we've got to think of this in its proper historical context. This, of course, leads to the Treaty of Versailles, which sets Europe and the world on this inevitable, what should not have been an inevitable course to confront Hitler in World War II. Many scholars that talk about genocide say that the only way to intervene in genocide is to prevent it in the very first instance, that once the first killing has happened, it is already too late. And by that time, you are most likely talking about military intervention of some sort, which then resurrects these ideas of isolationism. Again, Warren Harding in 1920 summed up the Republican position of that time when he declared, I am not insensible to the sufferings of Armenia, but I am thinking of America first. Safety as well as charity begins at home. And even then, it was being debated. At that time, Walter Lippmann in the New Republic declared this: if we fail at this juncture to vindicate Armenia's right to freedom, we shall never again persuade the world that our moral sentiments are anything but empty rhetoric, playing over a gulf of selfishness and sloth. And this language is from the Republican Party platform. They actually had one back in 1920, Anya. This is the Republican presidential platform of 1920. Quote, no more striking illustration can be found of President Wilson's disregard for the lives of American boys or American interests than his request for an Armenian mandate. In other words, to intervene. Americans should not confuse the humanitarian and material aid they should extend and the political control they ought to avoid. I couldn't help in doing some of this research and discuss the echoes of today. What is, you know, you and I are of, I think if we can safely say, so different generations, Anya.
Yeah.
Which is good because you bring to the table, again, that different perspective, which I value. When you think about these things, when you think about what's happening in our world today, these questions, this continued pernicious anti-Semitism in the United States, statements by the former MAGA president in response to overt anti-Semitism, the embracing of Nazi ideology and symbology. I'm thinking of Charlottesville in Virginia, the former MAGA president's words that there are good people on both sides.
Right.
What, how do you experience that?
Well, I'll say it like this. You can promote isolationism as a policy, but you cannot enforce isolationism when it comes to people. And I'll explain maybe a little further in a recommendation of a book. Before Poland was invaded,
yes,
there were small neighborhoods, small towns, who, sensing the Nazis were going to invade and were aware of the Nazis' feelings towards Jews and what they intended to do with those Jews, rounded up their neighbors and killed their Jewish neighbors in advance of the Nazis arriving. Some did it for fear that being found living with Jews they would be sentenced to the same fate, or maybe somehow getting brownie points. So Poland at that moment, right, was also attempting to be isolationist. We won't get involved with whatever Germany's doing. Let them be. But of course, the knowledge, the fear, the choices had already entered Poland and were enacted by the individuals. So we can want to not get tangled up in it as much as we want. The truth is, the ropes of tanglement are already around us. There is no staying disentangled. There's only disentangling yourself. We're a little past that point, I think. And the book that this story comes from is Neighbors, the Destruction of the Jewish Community in Yevvadne by Jan T. Gross. His last name, Gross, spelt just how it sounds.
Wow. This is President Franklin Roosevelt in 1935 saying this. Despite what happens in continents overseas, the United States of America shall and must remain, as the father of our country prayed that it might remain, unentangled and free. Other nations may, as they do, enforce contrary rules of conscience and conduct. Those policies are, however, beyond our jurisdiction. We will continue in just a few moments. You're going to have a farm update. Then Anya and I will be back. An extension of Holocaust Remembrance Day this past Monday, dealing with the very real racism, anti-Semitism, and challenges that we see in the world today. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. Change gon' come. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Every industry seems to be facing challenges trying to find qualified employees. Agriculture is no different. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. And if your sector of agriculture requires some specific training, well, your job pool just got smaller. Details on the way.
I look at this dairy cow, and again, it's the animal that I love. The things that this dairy cow can do and the way that she can produce milk, to me, there is no substitute for milk in the world. And to be able to keep cows and help cows produce that for people, to me, that's a privilege. I'm Dr. Bill Zimmer. Nutrition and microbials, commonly called probiotics. That's BioVet. Learn more at bio-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
Terry Cosby is the National Director of the Natural Resource Conservation Service through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He said they're facing incredible challenges trying to fill vacancies that they have because they require specific skills and specific training. And Cosby said in many cases, college campuses across the United States have dropped the key curriculum that they need to qualify employees.
Most of these college campuses have dropped classes out of their curriculum. That's important to us. And mainly soils courses. What we're finding is that when they're graduating from college, they don't qualify to come work for us because they don't have a soils course. And it seems to me that anyone that's in agriculture, a foundational course would be soils. You have to understand that because that is the backbone of farming and what we do. And so we're having a challenge right now on college campuses finding students that could come work for us. Now, we can hire them in other disciplines, but we need soil conservationists, and those are the folks that are out on these farms with the ranchers writing these conservation plans.
Terry Cosby, he is the National Director of the Natural Resource Conservation Service through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He said today they are now recruiting internships with students as young as 15.
Time to get back in the fields again. Whether you need high-quality used equipment to get the job done, or you have planting or other farm equipment you would like to sell, Steffes Group is a nationally recognized leader in the auction business with over 60 years of experience. To find a sales representative near you or for a list of upcoming auctions in your area and nationwide, visit steffesgroup.com. That's S-T-E-F-F-E-S group.com, your auction leader.
And May is Beef Month, and the Beef Checkoff this year is partnering up with the Little League World Series. As part of their partnership, they'll be named the official sponsor of the perfect home plate with Little League. They'll also be hosting a beef dinner the night before the opening game of the Little League Baseball World Series to fuel up those athletes. Find more at beefitswhatsfordinner.com. I'm Pam Yonke.
Partly sunny today and a touch breezy with winds out of the northeast, dragging our highs to the low 60s. Clouds thicken again tonight with spotty showers scraping us. Otherwise, tomorrow, more sunshine and highs in the upper 50s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 66 degrees.
I love my kids so much. I once sat for 3 hours in the cold rain to watch her soccer team lose by 18 goals.
I love my kids so much, I once used a tube to suck snot out of her stuffed nose at 3 a.m.
You win.
Love your kids? Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat. From toddlers to tweens, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat to find the right seat for their age and size. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Terry Barr, host of Slice of Wisconsin here on Civic Media. Mr. Zommers, what is that called?
My Wife is Drunk by Terry's favorite, Alvin Stasinski.
There you go.
Yeah. It's so funny to listen to a polka because you think, where did that song come from?
Right? We actually had one person text during the break there said, how about the Meadow Muffin Polka?
Todd, let's quickly write that and make it.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we go beyond the cheese for National Lost Sock Memorial Day and talk to a longstanding Wisconsin sock maker. Paul Noonan with sports, Brittany Merlot with weather and wine. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Thank you.
singing at a funeral tomorrow for a kid a year older than me. And I've been talking to his dad. It makes me so
welcome back, Wisconsin. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm joined today by my producer and friend, but today very special guest, Anya Esther. Today's episode is a sequel, a part two to our Mondays, our show from Monday, where we were observing Holocaust Remembrance Day. And today we're tackling what I think is probably one of the most complex topics of international relations and can feel so very distant, I think, for regular folks going about their day-to-day lives. And that is, what do we do? How do we understand, how do we grapple with genocide or crimes against humanity as it happens in the world? What role does each of us have? What lessons from history are there? And so we're trying to dig in. I grew up in a time in the 1990s where there were a number of genocides that were in the news on a near daily basis. And spent a good amount of my young adulthood trying to study international relations and foreign policy. I'm no expert in any of that, but I do bring, I think, my lawyer's eye and those experiences to the table and hopefully to the conversation today. And Anya brings her perspective as a convert to Judaism and as a person walking through the world today with that lived experience. So join us if you have questions, comments, we will get to you. Please be patient. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And one of the takeaways from today that I hope people recall is that these are not new questions. These are questions since the birth of our nation, the Monroe Doctrine, George Washington was an isolationist. We had these debates dating back to Teddy Roosevelt's time and Woodrow Wilson before World War I. And it's also extraordinarily important to remember that in leading up to World War II, there was a very isolationist wing, if not bipartisan majority opinion in the United States. 11 years passed between the beginning of the Nazi persecution of German Jews and the creation here in the United States of the War Refugee Board. It took 11 years. And if you don't remember the War Refugee Board, it was the government agency that saved tens of thousands of lives in the final 17 months of World War II. Now, obviously, much, much more could have and should have been done by the United States. And it's interesting to note that President Kennedy was deeply affected by his own father's isolationist position. He disagreed with it. He grappled with that as a young man. And so, of course, it has echoes in the Cold War, which then has the ripples in our discussion today. One of the documents I pulled to help prepare for today was the United States' response filed on September 7th of 2022 in the International Court of Justice in response to Russia's claim that it invaded Ukraine to stop alleged genocide in Ukraine. If you forgot that that was the pretext here, that was the pretext.
Forgot or like me, didn't even hear that bit way back in the day. So very, very interested to hear that that was Putin's claim. Wow. Yeah.
Well, and that there were sort of ethnically Russian people right in Ukraine. And so that's part of this whole, again, we can't avoid the fact that all of these dominoes of history come rifling right up to our noses today. That whole propaganda machine from Putin and basically alleging this genocide is what Marjorie Taylor Greene gets on the House of the floor of, on the floor of the House of the Representatives and spouts. Ron Johnson voted against funding for Ukraine. Here we are. This is history not knocking, but basically bulldozing through the door, right? I think trying to get our arms around why Holocaust denialism is a thing is tricky. I have always been like, were you homeschooled? I mean, I don't mean to be so flip at all, but it was just always like, what are you even talking about?
Right. Right. It's the maybe most human reaction I can have to Holocaust denial. And I try to not, you know, similarly to how we spoke on Monday about films that portray the Nazi point of view, you talk about it's important that Zone of Interest shows how hard they fought to ignore the atrocities they were committing, but also in film, we don't want to humanize or over-empathize with perpetrators. You end up walking away from the film with the wrong message. In that way, I don't want to over-empathize with those who choose to, certainly anyone who chooses to spew Holocaust denial, but to throw forward some empathy for those who are tricked by it momentarily or long-term. I can certainly empathize with the fact that it is hard to believe that this happened. Because it is a horrifying, unimaginable, huge event. When I traveled to Europe and I stood in a gas chamber and I stood on lands that were concentration camps, and you look, it cannot, even in those in-person experiences, you can't go. I've put my hand to the wall of a gas chamber covered in fingernail markings, and I still can't entirely comprehend that I was in that room and what that room's history was. So to a certain small extent, I understand the response to go, that can't be. That's too big. That's too many people. That's so much. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. But to cling to that from the fear, from the inability is not appropriate or acceptable, of course, right? So in that small amount, I try to cling to this idea of, I get it. It's huge. I've tried studying it. I have to walk away from it sometimes.
Yes.
But I can't walk away from it going, well, it doesn't matter, or worse, it's not real. I walk away from it and I go, it's so real that it hurts.
I am forced, compelled to say this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all the time about today's political environment and the choices that we face, we cannot stand in denial of what this choice means.
Right.
This November.
Yes. Yep.
It's just those that do so, I think, in large part from the safety that whiteness, that Christianity, from this perch of safety.
Yes. Yeah. I would say so. I think there's a lot of American folks who, you know, I'm a Jewish woman. I'm a woman of queer experience. I'm a woman, period.
Right.
So I, of course, am looking at America, my time here in America, and going, you know, to put it in a radio safe way, you know, what are we doing? How close are we getting? I think there's a lot of Americans who are still in the mindset of either it could never happen here or it could never happen to me. You know, it's not going to be me who gets affected. And I just like to remind people, you know, fascism is a self-necrotizing disease. It may start in the foot, seeks to destroy the foot. You may think you're okay because you're an eyebrow, you're way up here. But once it's done with the foot, it will destroy the leg. And when it's done with the leg, it will destroy the torso. Right. It will make its way up. If you're all that's left, it will take you out too. That might take a while, but I think it's important to remember that fascism and sort of the disease that Nazism put forward, the destruction of other human beings, in the end, it will come for us all. How close or how far away you see yourself from the victims that have already been taken, it will come for us all. And we have to be actively pushing against that. Whether it's voting, talking about these things, that's what bearing witness is to,
correct,
is to gather the knowledge and be able to say, hey, I see that you're doing this thing. I know that the last time someone did this thing, people got hurt, people got killed, lives were lost, institutions were all these awful, awful things. That's why I'm going to say something now, because I've seen it and I don't want it to happen again. That's really at its core, on a broad sense, what people can do.
Well, and I believe, you know, in 2005, the United Nations adopted a principle called the responsibility to protect. that, I mean, deep within myself, at times I want to cry out to my fellow citizens, my fellow Wisconsinites, my friends and family, and say, do we not have a responsibility to one another? Weren't we all raised with that same idea?
Right.
That we have a responsibility to protect our democracy, to stand, to bear witness, to vote, to accept this deep civic responsibility, and to do so with some humility and reverence for other people, the dignity of other people. And I just, to be facing a choice where one of the primary candidates for the presidency of the United States talks about poisoning the blood of Americans, talks about human beings as animals, talks about countries as blank hole countries, talks about Nazis as being good people. I mean, that's what the man said.
Right. Right. And I want to state how much of the Trump rhetoric in 2019, when I was on my fellowship trip to Germany and Poland, we stopped at the house known as the Wannsee House, where the Wannsee conference occurred. Huge mansion on the Wannsee, now turned into a museum about Nazi propaganda. And I want to be clear, I have photos of, you know, scans of posters from the Nazi era where rhetoric surrounding comparing Jewish people to rats, comparing Polish people to vermin, the language of blood and of poison, I want to be clear, it really truly comes directly from Himmler and Goebbels's playbook.
Yes.
I don't say that to be, you know, the annoying liberal who goes, oh, Trump's a Nazi or something. I say it to go, in 2019, I visited the house that these choices occurred in and saw the exact same language
Correct.
In German that is being used in English today. And it's very, very scary. Yeah, that's all you can do is sigh after.
Yes. Yeah. We've got callers. Thank you for being patient. We're going to start to go to the phones. If you want to join our discussion, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What is our responsibility to protect one another? And how does that translate in the individual decisions that we make every day, our decisions as voters? What does your vote symbolize? What does it mean when you try to stack that up with your own moral compass? If you disavow these things, I'm no Nazi, I'm no racist, I'm no anti-Semite, then what is your vote? On which side of history will you choose to be counted? These are the questions faced today. They aren't hypothetical. It is not rhetorical. It is not hysteria. And again, these are not new questions for the United States or for the people that live in free and open society. These have been age-old questions. My hope is that when faced with these challenges, that we don't shrink from them, we don't turn inward, that we extend a hand to one another and say, this is not acceptable. This speech is not acceptable, to shout it back down. A person may have the right to say abhorrent, terrible things, but we can then, you and me and Anya and Calvin, we get to respond and shout that back down. Please stay tuned, everybody. We're going to take a couple of quick messages. We're going to go to the phones. You want to join our conversation, like to text and participate, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. And it's
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Slip inside the ivy on my... Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're having a special second episode this week. Our first was Monday. If you missed that, you can go to civicmedia.us to check it out. I pulled my friend and producer out of the booth into the interviewee guest chair to have Monday's episode, an observation of Holocaust Remembrance Day, and to have what I think is then the necessary second level of conversation, which is never again, but how? Never again, but how? Let's take some callers. If you've never called in before, please let Calvin know. He's manning the phones. You'll go to the top of the list if you've not called in before. 855-75-CIVIC. Please let Calvin know that. 855-752-4842. Calvin, let's take Carolyn from Madison. Carolyn from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What would you like to share this afternoon?
Hi. Since Monday's show, when Anya pointed out how the Levant and how these three religions came out of, was it the Levant? Am I right about that?
Yep, that's the right terminology. Yep.
Okay. I was thinking how there might have been at the time or through that time some fascist wannabes who wanted to control that whole area. And I mean, there's parts of the three Abrahamic religions that I really like, you know, the holidays and things that... the kind of celebrations and things they celebrate and stuff like that. But I'm just wondering, they provided a convenient them for anybody who, you know, like Hitler needed a them to protect his people against, and Trump's doing the same thing these days.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. When we think about what are the predicate steps, what are the first things that happen to get to a genocide, the language we use today is otherizing. You take someone and you say, well, they're not us. That's them. They're bad. When you go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and if you haven't been there, I highly recommend. They actually break down the 10 stages of genocide. And the first stage is to classify the other. You know, like migrants poisoning the blood of America, and they're not humans, they're animals. You know that. Step one, classification. Andrew from Detroit, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Good afternoon, ladies. We have to remember that this has been going on in this landmass we call the United States since the beginning When the colonists came over, the New England colonies, they wanted to impose English rule on the Native Americans. And we had the King Philip's War go on there. And then always and always with different people that were either brought onto this landmass or already lived here. What we did with the Trail of Tears with the Native Americans, what we did with importing Africans to this country, what we did with importing the Chinese to build the railroads, what we did to imprison the Japanese. It's always been, this is mine, and you're in my way. And if you've got to be here, I've got to do something about you. And it happens all over the world. Maybe it started with the Vikings going. I don't know. But I think I'm from a culture that probably has some Viking blood and probably from a culture that has some Jewish blood. But this happens all over the world. When somebody goes in and I claim this in the name of, I mean, thank God there was nobody on the moon, or it would have happened to them as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, nobody on the moon, or it would happen there as well. If you are going to oppress another human being, if you are going to strip away any dignity or rights, you have to do it with an excuse. You have to come up with the framework that makes that acceptable. And you do that by classifying, by then having people wear a symbol of their classification or using various symbols to represent that classification. The Star of David, a blue scarf in Cambodia. In the 90s, a white armband in Bosnia. And then you discriminate. Then you change the laws to isolate the other that we now can identify because there is a symbol. And then you dehumanize repeatedly. Those are the four first steps to genocide. Does any of this ring a bell for people? I mean, what are we doing? Dave from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, hi, Jason Stanley from Yale. It's a great book. I probably got what it's called, about fascism. But, you know, you can read that, and then you can see its connection to today. And that's why I'm really glad you're doing the show. And you're drawing a connection to today. You know, it's this other, a lot of people mention other, them, that kind of thing. You know, it's like watching the run-up to World War II. It really is. These, you know, our ethnic nationalists, they take a group. And in this case, at our time, instead of the Jews, although now it includes the Jews too, but instead of the Jews largely, it's they go after immigrants. And it's a worldwide phenomenon. And that's why it's happening here with Donald Trump, who's a right-wing populist. But, you know, you have the AfD in Germany polling at much higher than the Social Democratic Party, and Meloni, who just became Prime Minister of Italy.
We've got to hang on there, Dave. I want you to come back after top of the hour, Dave, and make this point about the parties in Germany. So if Calvin, if we can keep Dave, we'll do that. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. Part two of Holocaust Remembrance Day. How do you, an individual, help prevent and stand up to genocide? Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after news, weather, and sports.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian Rocky Laporte, who joins the show to talk about his big show in Wisconsin, and Jimmy Cuska joins me to talk sports.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
Progressive presents 10 things on a food truck owner's to-do list that are harder than getting a commercial auto insurance quote.
Stocking the fridge, prepping the stations, finding employees that get along well, finding employees that actually do their job. Looking at you, Gary. Balancing the books, balancing the flavors, having a fresh menu and fresh produce and fresh meat, but never a fresh mouth. But the easiest thing on a small business owner's to-do list? Seeing if you can save on commercial auto insurance. Get a quote in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage subject to policy terms and conditions.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.